here's what people are saying about Lisa Wexler.
Fantastic show. Love your comments and how you're so nice to people.
Back to the Lisa Wexler Show on Southern Connecticut's news and information leader, WICC 600.
As we stand here today, 1 year since January 6, 2021, the lies that drove the anger and madness we saw in this place, they have not abated. So we have to be firm, resolute, and unyielding in our defense of the right to vote and to have that vote counted. Some have already made the ultimate sacrifice in this sacred effort. Jill and I have mourned police officers in this Capitol Rotunda not once but twice in the wake of January 6th.
From President Biden's speech this morning, 203-333-9422, as we talk about the significance of January 6th. Joining us now is Congressman Jim Himes, who represents our 4th Congressional District and has done so for quite a while now. Hello, Congressman Himes. Thanks for coming on today.
Good morning, Lisa. Thanks for having me.
So you are having a 1 p.m. Facebook Live discussion. I want everyone to know that. How can they find you at 1 p.m., Congressman Himes? How can they?
If they go to my Facebook page, just look up Jim Himes on Facebook. It's my official page, so the official government page. And, you know, it won't necessarily be a long Facebook Live, but I wanted to, since I was in the chamber on that day and actually was along with Rosa DeLauro of Connecticut, just up the way in New Haven. Two of us were kind of some of the last members out of the chamber on that horrible morning a year ago. So I was just going to sort of recount what that was like, not just in the chamber, but in the several hours that we spent afterwards in a secure room as the police took several hours to subdue the people who had attacked the Capitol. And then I'll take questions, obviously, from people who have them and do my best to answer those questions.
So, Congressman Himes, when you were collectively grouped, you obviously weren't separated into Democrats and Republicans. In that moment of time, were your colleagues of one mind about what was going on in terms of their horror at it and their, you know, disgust at it? Like what was going on when you were together with your colleagues that might vote differently in a lot of ways, but you were there huddled in that room together on that day?
Yeah, it was a very strange situation. And it was strange because, yes, the answer to your question is yes. Everybody was horrified by what they've just seen. I mean, it was one of those things where you just sort of can't believe your eyes. I mean, I think all of us had assumed, certainly I had assumed, that the Capitol was an enormously secure location, that there was no way that, you know, even a trained group of terrorists would get in, much less a group of people who weren't particularly organized or trained in, you know, military assault tactics. So it was just shocking to us that it had happened as a matter of sort of mechanics. And of course, it was shocking. I mean, look, you know, that Donald Trump was never going to accept the results of the election that he lost, and not just lost, but lost in a landslide, wasn't surprising to people. But that he would sit for hours, while the Capitol was being attacked and not do anything, and in fact, to urge it on. You know, there's that famous conversation with Kevin McCarthy in which the president says, I guess these folks like our democracy better than you do, Kevin. That was really shocking, and you'll remember, Lisa, that immediately thereafter, you know, Kevin McCarthy, for example, said the president bears responsibility for this, and many members were angry about it. Sadly, today they don't want to talk about it, or some of them are going as far as to say, like, oh, it was just a bunch of tourists, or gosh, Antifa was involved. And so, the bottom line, Lisa, I'm frankly more concerned for the health of our democracy today than I was a year ago when it was being physically assaulted in the Capitol.
So I agree that there are, you're not the only one. Jimmy Carter today wrote a very compelling piece about how he spent decades after being president trying to have full and fair and transparent elections around the world. And now he's afraid that these insidious techniques have come back to disrupt America. It's a very important piece. Everyone should read it. But and you're not the only person who said that in terms of this strategy of going into state legislators and obscure election commissions and undermining Brad Raffensperger in Georgia, that there is just this widespread undermining of the way in which we have always conducted our elections. But my question to you, Congressman Himes, is why? Why do you think so many Americans continue to believe Donald Trump's version of events? Why? What kind of hold does he have on people? Why?
Yeah. I've thought about this every single day for 4 years, and here's my best take. It's probably we could have an hour conversation about that, but here's my best thinking. The country's gone through a lot of change. We have seen economic change that has left huge numbers of communities, particularly in the Midwest, old mill towns where there used to be lots of factories and good jobs. That's changed. A lot of the prosperity has moved to the coasts and away from places like Michigan and Ohio, and it's devastated people. Look at opioid use in Ohio and Michigan and those areas that used to be the industrial heartland. We've changed socially in a big way, right? There's very few communities in this country now who are as lily white as they were 50 years ago. You know, we've got immigrants from all over the world, and a lot of us think that that's a real strength, but it's dislocating to some people. There's been a lot of social change. You know, I talk to conservatives, even here in Fairfield County, who I think are good people, but, you know, they're sort of bewildered by the fact that just down the street, two women married each other. You know, and we should celebrate that progress, but it does dislocate people. So if you have that as a base, and then you get a guy like Donald Trump who turns that anxiety and that sense of dislocation and that sense of change into hatred. You know, your town is in trouble not because of, you know, trade and globalization or automation. It's in trouble because of Mexicans who have taken your job, or the Chinese who have, you know, assaulted our country, or, you know, oftentimes people with darker skin. Some people, you know, for thousands of years, of course, it's been the Jews who have been the scapegoat for this sort of thing. It's an old, old story, Lisa. You know, make people believe that other people are responsible for your discomfort, for your pain, and you get a demagogue who will twist people to do some truly horrible things. And I think that's the only explanation I have for how what I suspect. Look, there were some very dangerous people there on January 6th, you know, some of these, you know, Proud Boys and 3%ers. But I saw a lot of these folks, you know, and I was talking to a reporter the other day. These were folks that you might have seen in Starbucks, right? And but they had been so warped by a demagogue, by an evil demagogue, that they were willing to attack police officers and hurt police officers and assault the seat of their democracy.
Yeah. You know, there are a lot of people who call this show and write me who want to equate, who do equate the Black Lives Matter protests with the argument that January 6th was, you know, a terrible thing. And I see it qualitatively different from the point of view of what the people in January 6th were trying to do and achieve, which was, you know, a true disruption, I would argue, a traitorous attempt to dismantle our Constitution and the peaceful transition of power, versus riots that sometimes got out of control and property damage and personal damage that rightly needed to be punished, but that came from a sense of general injustice and police brutality, which is not to excuse the behavior. But I'd like to ask you, Congressman Himes, because you represent our district, our 4th district, which has inner cities, but also has lily white suburbs that may be changing over time, but have that reputation. There is still a sense within our own community, within your own district, that there needs to be some kind of an equivalency. And I see this all the time, and I get emails on this every day, between discussing the Black Lives Matter movement and the right-wing movement that propels and you know, that is part of the loyalty to Donald Trump. And they're always in the same sentence. And I was wondering if you had some thoughts about that.
Yeah, I sure do. And it makes me crazy, Lisa, because it just shows the extent to which we're willing to lose our sense of moral discernment around important things in the service of our political tribalism. And what I mean by that, I'll say two things, and I'll just say them as directly and clearly as I can. Number one, violence and lawlessness is never okay. and should be condemned, whether it's committed by an Antifa protester in Portland throwing a brick through a window or somebody breaking a window in the Capitol. It's never okay. And if you do it, you need to go to jail. Let's be clear about that. Let me say the second thing. And the second thing is really important. There is no comparison between some idiot in Portland or Philadelphia or Seattle throwing a brick through the window and the president of the United States promoting a big lie that gets – it's like an arrow in the heart of our democracy, that an election was stolen, and telling people to go to the country – to the Capitol and fight or you won't have a country anymore, with Steve Bannon in the Willard Hotel in some kind of war room and Rudy Giuliani, a president driving an insurrection and some idiot throwing a brick through a window. And even if there were, Lisa, you and I are both parents. At what point did we get so morally corrupt that the other side does it too is an excuse? Now, again, there's no comparison between the two things. But when did we decide that that makes things okay? You and I both had toddlers. And when our toddlers, you know, hit each other, well, he did it too. It mm-hmm. took us 2 milliseconds to say that's not an excuse. So how is it that we're at a place of such corruption, of such moral corruption, that it's okay? It's somehow not as bad to attack a police officer 30 feet from where I stand because some guy threw a brick through a window in Bend, Oregon. I'll tell you, Lisa, if that's the state of our moral thinking, I wonder whether if that's who we are, if we think that that is a compelling moral argument, there's some real questions about whether we deserve a democracy in this country because maybe we're not worthy of it.
Well, I will tell you, we're chatting with Congressman Jim Himes, that one of the judges who was a chief judge, a woman, and was appointed by President Obama, sees the prosecution by the Justice Department of a lot of the people at the Capitol that day to be grossly inequitable compared to the prosecution of people who also destroyed property around the Capitol during the Black Lives Matter movement. And she has said so publicly, and she is a prominent Democrat. So she thinks the administration of justice hasn't been fair and even.
Well, there's going to be all kinds of different opinions out there. I don't know how one would make that case. There have been 700 people charged of the thousands who assaulted that Capitol today, many of whom have either pled guilty and said that they wish they hadn't done what they did. They've been charged with things like assaulting police officers, like trespassing on federal property, stopping Congress from doing its job. It's interesting to me, as I think about our judicial system, you know, and I think about things like the fact that a white person arrested with cocaine is going to be sentenced much more lightly than a black person with crack cocaine, despite the fact that they're chemically equivalent things. And this is a well-known thing. The bias against African Americans in our judicial system, that today people are saying, oh my goodness, look at the bias in this system. First of all, I don't believe that there's any evidence that that's true, and I'm not sure how you would draw that conclusion because we haven't had a violent attack on our legislature in this country. So it's hard to point to other examples and say, oh look, they did it differently back then. But man, if you really want to make the argument that, you know, the lily white crowd that attacked the Capitol is somehow being treated unfairly. Let me ask you to think about something. And I'm not going to tell you I know the answer, but let me just ask you to think about it. What if that crowd on January 6th had been a black crowd? What do you think would have happened? I'll just leave it there.
Yeah, well, that's a conversation we've been having on our show pretty often, actually. We're chatting with Congressman Jim Himes. So, but I do think it's important to voice this because, Congressman, this is really what people are thinking, you know. They may not say it out loud, but it is what they're thinking. They're thinking,
well, you know, Lisa, look, it's up to leaders, and not just political leaders. It's up to faith leaders to make sure that we don't lose our moral discernment, you know, to make sure we don't lose our sense of character, our sense of what's right and wrong. And, you know, I'd like to believe that I can be clear about violence that is instigated by people for whom I have more sympathy than I do Trump supporters. Mm-hmm. But it's up to us in a world where 66% or 70% of Republicans believe that Donald Trump is the legitimate president. Yeah. We can't just say, oh, well, they believe that. No, we need to say truth matters. If you can't agree, if you can't stand up for the truth in a democracy, you will lose your democracy.
So what do we do with that? Because so one of the other things, and this is another sort of insistent drumbeat from some people, is that there are no good Republicans. And I'm sure that you hear this among Democrats, Congressman Himes. This idea that anybody today who's affiliated with the Republican Party because of the way Donald Trump has led it can't be a good person, is somebody that must be defeated. You know, the reality is, if that comes to its logical conclusion, we end up with a one-party system. And you know what? That's China. That's Russia. That's not America. We still need a healthy two-party system. And I am all for a strong and healthy Republican Party, whether I agree with them or disagree with them issue by issue. I think it's a very necessary thing. And party leaders who I respect in the, you know, that I know of agree with me. So in other words, leaders in the world agree with me. So, and I bet you agree with me too. You don't want to see a one party country. So what do we who care about America do if three out of four Republicans want to keep going with this guy who even the majority of independents in this country see as a destabilizing force in American political life? And that's an understatement. What do we do with that? What do we do?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Lisa, because and you're hearing this from a Democratic elected official. It's a terrible mistake to say that all Republicans are the problem. It's a terrible mistake to say that traditional Republican ideology, small government, lower taxes, robust national defense, is not a perfectly legitimate set of issues. In the entire time I've been an elected official, I have tried really hard to reach across the aisle, to generate bipartisanship, to work with Republicans, and I will continue to do that. But I will not continue, I will never do that, and I will never compromise on the integrity of our democracy. And that means, look, I'll negotiate with you over tax policy or over trade policy or immigration policy. I'll even look, I'm pro-choice. There aren't many issues, Lisa, as you know, quite as divisive as abortion in this country. Here's how I think about it. I believe in a woman's right to choose, but daggone it, I've got a huge amount of respect for people who see it differently. And the bottom line, Lisa, to answer your question, if we are a democracy, we govern ourselves through persuasion. We persuade people. Now, look, are we ever going to persuade the Matt Gaetzes and the Marjorie Taylor Greens of the world to come? Of course we're not, and I wouldn't waste a second on that. I can't even be in the room with those people. But, you know, there's lots of different kinds of right-leaning people, Republicans, and it's our job to persuade them. I got into an argument on MSNBC the other night with a political pundit and a political reporter named Matt Dowd, and I got in trouble with a whole bunch of liberals because Matt Dowd said, we need to say that this was what it was. It was terrorism. It was terrorism, and the Trump movement is terrorism. And look, and my response was, of course, there were some really nasty people there, the Proud Boys, again, the armed folks, the people that are calling for armed violence, terrorists, absolutely. But to say that the people who – that all of the people that were there, a lot of them having been duped by Donald Trump, or all the people who support Donald Trump, to say that they're terrorists or that they're evil,
ridiculous.
That is not the way to stitch our country back together. And we have an obligation, yes, to demand accountability, including of Donald Trump, but to reach out to the other side and say, let's reestablish the sense of commonality that is a strength in this country.
One other thing, Congressman Jim Himes, I'm very glad you're on the show. We're talking about January 6th. It is going to be you're going to do a Facebook Live at 1 p.m. where people can continue the conversation. I want to just let you know something else going on, which is a murmuring already about who's going to be the president next. And it's so ridiculous. It's 1 year into the term. Nobody gets to even, like, you know, govern for a second and a half before someone's wondering what's going to be next. But having said that, the bench for both the Democrats and Republicans on a national level looks increasingly thin and too old. And, you know, you're a young leader of the Democratic Party. You're a relatively young man still. I'm sure you're aging by the day in Washington, D.C. But you started out very young. And I know that you've taken a leadership role in fundraising. I know you're on television a lot now, on cable. Do you have higher aspirations yourself? Where is the bench going to come from? Because with all due respect to President Biden, if he runs again, he will leave office at the age of 86. Most people I know think that 82 to 86 is not the best, are not your best years to be the president of the United States. What are you as a leading Democrat going to do to invigorate the bench?
Yeah, good question. And as you point out, we're a long way from the election of 24, so I'm not going to start trying to project what may or may not happen. But I'll tell you this. You know, I'm 55 years old, so I'm ready.
You're a kid by their standards. You're a kid.
I'm ready for, you know, John F. Kennedy said, you know, the torch is passed to a new generation. And I have a lot of respect for Biden and all of the leadership, to some extent on both sides of the aisle. But they're all in their late 70s or 80s, and it is time for some generational change. With respect to the bench, you know, hang on. You'll remember that in 1992, it felt like there wasn't much of a bench, and all of a sudden, a young governor from Arkansas that nobody's ever heard of comes out of the woodwork named Bill Clinton. You know, in 2008, you know, bench feels pretty thin, and a young senator from Illinois named Barack Obama that nobody's ever heard of comes out of the woodwork. So, you know, we'll see. But, you know, it's funny. I'm sure older people always feel this way, but, you know, half of Americans now, let's just say those that are under the age of, you know, 35 or something, you know, they grew up in a real different world than folks that are older than 35. You know, constant social media, staring at their devices on Facebook, on Twitter, on TikTok, you know. And so, yeah, it kind of feels like it is time for generational change in the United States.
It definitely does. All right. So that's all right. So you got the message. We need some people warming the bench, and maybe you'll be one of them, Congressman. Have you ever been approached to run for national office?
No, not in any serious way. You know, no, I've never really. Look, it's a tough day. It's a tough day. But the truth is, representing the people of southwestern Connecticut, it's not always easy, but it's a huge privilege. And let's close the conversation this way, because it's a source of optimism for me. There's a lot of crazy around the country politically. There's a lot less here in Connecticut. I'm so
That's
proud
true.
Of the state. I mean, as you know, most of our people here in southwestern Connecticut, yeah, they're Democrats and yeah, they're Republicans, but they kind of cluster around the middle.
Yeah, we do.
We didn't see violence. We don't see a lot of, you know, violence associated with the vaccine and masking. A little bit, but anyway, my point is that, boy, are we lucky living here in southwestern Connecticut
are.
Where people
I feel
are pretty
that
decent
way too.
To each other. Yeah.
I feel that way too. I'm very grateful to come home whenever, wherever it is that I go. I'm increasingly grateful that I live here. I agree with you.
Amen.
Congressman Jim Himes, 1 o'clock, you'll be able to talk to him on Facebook and continue to talk about the perspective with respect to January 6th. It's an important conversation. We're going to keep the conversation going. Thank you very much for joining us today on this very important day. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me. Take care, Lisa.
You too. Congressman Jim Himes on the Lisa Wexler Show. We'll be right back.